This is Very Interesting Radio with Very Interesting Magazine.
What I was actually saying, Bruce, is that these are things that I think about in the shower. Don't you think about these questions? I mean, how far do coughs and sneezes actually travel?
I think about it in the shower when I have a cough, but I probably am singing something or something otherwise. But this is not an answer you want to hear, frankly, particularly if you work in a studio, you know, with other people directly across from you on the table. Am I freaking you out yet?
No. Yes. Sasha says yes.
Yes, very much.
No, because it's a long way. Coughing apparently spreads the sort of droplets of whatever it is, you know, the bugs and the mucus and everything, about 6 meters, and sneezing is about 8 meters.
Now you're freaking us out.
It's bigger than the studio.
That once that's happened, all that stuff stays sitting in the air for about 10 minutes, you know, obviously depending on what it was and so on. But you've got, yeah, you're in range is the short answer, and it's going to be there for a while. Yeah. So it's not pretty.
Now, Bruce, here comes the next question, because you know that Indian mothers, Jewish mothers, Greek mothers, Italian mothers, I think they're all the same person.
And right? They all have prodigies.
And every one of their children is a child prodigy, yes. So what makes a child a prodigy?
I kind of saw that one coming. the prodigy, the definition is when a kid can perform at an adult professional level in whatever area it is. So it could be music, it could be maths, it could be skateboarding for that matter. But it's just at an adult professional level. Now, a lot of it is probably nurture rather than nature, in that, you know, you'll have ambitious parents and they'll school their kids and really push them hard in a certain area. That's part of it. But what experts have also found is that a study in 2014, they looked at 18, you know, established child prodigies, if you like, and they found that they had a huge heightened attention to detail and an exceptional working memory. So that's an ability to store and process information in a very short time period. And then add to that a sort of ambition, the kid wants to do something, and that'll happen.
Incredible. So with the support and... Yeah, that's wonderful.
Some of it is being pushed, and some of it is that incredible short-term memory, just being able to absorb it quickly, yeah.
Yeah, we're trying to push our sports journalist, Louis Karpus, to come up with interesting sports questions about camels, about sheep tossing, about, you know, frog jumping and those kind of questions about those kind of sports. All right, let me also ask you, do you think we could ever send a robotic probe to the center of the Earth, especially if it's flat, apparently?
No, is the short answer. I mean, it's a lovely. I'm a huge Jules Verne fan, and he had all those lovely books and, you know, Journey to the Center of the Earth, all right. Of that. But it's nearly kind of 6,500 km to the center, the deepest we've ever gone, which was an enormous borehole called the Kola Super Deep Borehole, but that was about 12 kilometers deep. So 12 versus 6,500, we're getting nowhere. And the pressure down there is apparently it's more than 3,000 times the pressure at the bottom of the deepest part of the ocean that we've been to, and it's over 5,000 degrees Celsius. So, whatever you sent down there, whatever it was made of, it would squash, it would get crushed, and then it would probably sort of boil away. So it's a bit of a waste of money at this point. We'll have to figure out some more technology there.
I know that this is a very unfair question to ask you, but do you know how deep the deepest mine in the world is? I'm just wondering.
I did know this at some point.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to say 5 km, but I have a feeling it's Western Deep Levels in Carlton is one of the deepest, and I think that's about 3.6.
Sure. And so the deepest hole was how deep, did you say?
12 kilometers.
12 kilometers. Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. And very finally, this time of the year, one of the favorite things to do is lie in the sun and just feel the winter sun on your back. But the thing is that it makes you feel very, very sleepy. So it's an ideal thing to do on a Sunday afternoon. Why does it make us feel sleepy?
Well, there's two options. There's two aspects to that, because particularly in winter, there's going to be some cold breeze as well, and you're going to have the sun. So the sun will be heating you up, and your body immediately reacts to stop you overheating. So part of that is to sweat. It's part of its energy output. And if you sweat, obviously you need to drink more, otherwise you get dehydrated, and that feeling is you get lethargic in that sort of sense as well. And then in the case of being cold as well, because even if you are lying in the sun, there'll be a cool breeze, chill factor, all of that, and your body will be consuming other energy to keep you warm. So you've got your body trying to do the best by you, and essentially all it's doing is using up energy, and you're getting more and more tired, which is not the worst thing if you're lying on the ground in the sun, but it does mean you're not going to be terribly productive the rest of the day.
Amazing. Bruce DeMille, I love talking to you on Tuesday about, you know, these things that one thinks about in the shower. But if you aren't thinking about them, or if you are thinking about them, go and check out a very interesting magazine. You can pick it up at Jill, at CNA, at Exclusive Books, at Woolworths. They also sell it. I think it's a Pick and Pay as well. Right, Bruce?
It is. And Checkers, all of those kinds of places.
Yeah, all the supermarkets. Thank you very, very much. Look forward to speaking to you next Tuesday. That's Bruce DeMille. He is the editor of Very Interesting Magazine.